Okay, so we want to talk about our structure and meaning of clauses here. We're going to start moving into an analysis where we're going to look at what the speaker is trying to accomplish by speaking, and we're going to try to look at the types of clauses, the sort of form that the clause takes, and match that to what they're trying to accomplish and sort of see how there's meaning behind using one type of clause over another type of clause. Specifically, we'll get into interrogatives in a later lecture. But before that, we want to talk about the structure of clauses. Okay, so we've got three types of sentences here. Simple and complex and compound. The simple sentence here is one independent clause. I know that sentence is, well, we could have the argument that sentence isn't really what the term that we want to use here. This word sentence is really only describes written language. And even then is not a very good term to use because, I mean, what is a sentence? It starts with a capital letter and ends with a punctuation mark, like a period or an exclamation point. That's not really a good linguistic analysis for us. clause is probably the one that we want to use. And if you look at grammars that talk about spoken and written English, they will tend to use clause, or they'll approach this topic early on in the grammar and talk about, you know, whether they're going to use the word sentence or clause or whatever. we can stick with it right now because it's something that we're all familiar with, and it's not a sort of debate that we need to have right now. We're familiar with sentence and we're not really worried about, at the moment, we're not really worried about how well the term defines language, spoken and written language. Okay, so that out of the way. Simple sentence, one independent clause, no subordination at all. So we had an open doors day for students yesterday at the department. You can have adverbials in a simple sentence. It doesn't just need to be, say, subject predicator. There can be adverbials, but there can't be any subordination going on. That comes with our compound or in our complex sentences. So compound sentences are when we put two independent clauses together. It is February and students are getting tired. So we put these two together with and. We basically remove the period and put an and instead. And we could do more as well. So we have conjunction going on here and coordinates two clauses. It's not coordinating. Notice it's not necessarily coordinating two subjects here. The subjects are different. It is February. So it is the subject in the first one and students the subject in the second one. Occasionally, you'll get a subject that is not repeated. In the later clause, we can look at that later. Okay, so then we get on to subordination. So the head of the department told the students that they should contact teachers by email when they need consultation. Here we've got a complex sentence because we've got an independent clause and then you have one or more dependent clauses. So clauses that are embedded somehow. With a complex sentence, we can have more than one subordinate clauses. We don't just need to have one, but we need to have at least one to make the complex sentence. Here, this one, we have the subordination coming or starting with that. So the head of the department told the students that they should contact teachers by email, and then also when they need consultations. We've got two subordinate clauses going on there. Okay, so those are our three types of sentences, and you can see it's page 50 in the booklet. Maybe we can flip over there when we're done. Now, let's look at dependency here. So we've got our obligatory clauses, and these function as, you know, essential elements in the sentence structure. So we know something like, for example, the subject is an obligatory clause. We need to have the subject, with the exception of imperatives. But we saw our different clause types in there, and every one of them had subject in them. So your example here, what he told us yesterday will never be revealed to outsiders. What he told us is subject there. And instead of it being, say, a phrase, like a noun phrase, what we actually have is a clause here. And clauses can function as the essential element in the sentence. So clauses can function as subject, for example. We can't mark this as a noun phrase. This is another point where you sometimes see, like, online explanations of grammar. Maybe not explaining things entirely or explaining things incorrectly. And maybe I hope I'm going to explain things entirely right now, but we'll see. What's going on here is that we can't mark this as, say, a noun phrase, even though it's okay. It's kind of doing what a noun phrase does, and that it's like functioning as a subject. So you may see people say that, you know, okay, here's a clause functioning as as a noun, for example. That's not what we want to do. What we want to do instead is say that, hey, what we've got here is we've got a clause. We can mark it as non-finite or finite because it's got a verb in there. And so we just look at the verb and say, okay, what do we have here? We've got the verb told, which is tensed. So it's showing tense, so it's finite. We could mark it as a nominal clause as well because it has this what at the beginning. So fine with that. We know it can be subject. And clauses can be other things as well, like direct objects, indirect objects, these kinds of things. Clauses can also be optional, so they can function as, you know, adjuncts, adverbials of different sorts. So we have an example here: when there was a lot of noise in the corridor, the headmaster ordered the students to be quiet. So this, when there was a lot of noise in the corridor, this is an adverbial clause. This is an optional element. This is something that we don't need. It's not a obligatory element in the clause. And I think maybe this is something you're familiar with because, you know, your analyses of sentences in the past, you've already seen, okay, picking out the subject and the predicator and then the other necessary elements, and then everything else is the adverbial, right? So, yeah. Then you have what we're going to call here peripheral clauses. So these are your EN, your ING participial clauses, usually separated with a comma here. So we have something like he sat down and looked at her, comma, not knowing what to say. I mean, comma in the written language. This not knowing what to say is our non-finite clause here. It has a non-finite verb form, knowing, in there. And this is, you know, what we're trying to think about here is how dependent are these things? There's sort of a scale of dependency here. So when the clause is functioning as, say, subject, then, you know, it's very, very dependent here. But when we go down that scale, it's sort of less and less close to necessary element or dependent element. And other things being dependent on that clause as well. quick refresher on our indicators of subordination. So we can have single word indicators, when, where, because, since, etc. Multi-word ones, in order that, assuming that, are WH elements, whether, that conjunctions. So we saw that one already, told the students that. Subject operator inversion in declarative clauses, were she here, she would support the decision. We've got this were and she inverted here. And non-finite clauses as well. She could not imagine having a better life. All right, let's look at types of subordinate clauses then. The first one we will look at are nominal clauses. These are embedded obligatory elements in the sentence structure. So subject, complement, direct object, typically. It can be, say an indirect object, for example. But nominal clauses, nominal because they're kind of doing something that a noun does. Whoever said that told you a lie. Here's the subject. Whoever said that. She's where she's always wanted to be. So this where she's always wanted to be is embedded at the subject complement level. And embedded here, it's kind of like they took another sentence and smooshed it into this sentence. She is where she's always wanted to be. And then as a nominal clause is direct object, he never knows what he wants to eat. So yeah, we could have non-finite ing clauses here. She cannot imagine having a better life. The nominal clause here embedded at the direct object level. And also a non-finite nominal clause here. Their approach was characteristically to divide the sentence up into ICs. Here we've got this to infinitive, to divide. Okay, looking at some other types of subordinate clauses. relative clauses, these are familiar to us, I believe, from other classes, other lectures, even maybe this one. Relative clauses are always going to be a post modifier in a noun phrase, restrictive or non-restrictive. There are some grammars you might pick up where that analyze relative clauses just a little bit differently. So be aware of that. But we don't have to worry about that right now. Here you've got examples like the London address was presumably that of the house which Constance hated and which I had never seen. You've got restrictive relative clauses here, which Constance hated and which I had never seen. Next one is a non-restrictive one. It's not necessary in the sentence. It's not necessary to define the noun that antecedent, the noun that it is sort of post-modifying. We don't need this restrictive, or we don't need this relative clause to pick the noun out of a set and sort of tell us which one it is. We have here these noises, which I had never heard before, worried me. And then you've got another one. He asked for a transfer, comma, which surprised all who knew him. This is what's called a sentential relative clause. So you can see it kind of modifying the whole sentence there. It's kind of its meaning kind of washes over the rest of the sentence rather than just one noun. other types of subordinate clauses. Okay, if we've got adverbial clauses, these are always optional elements, pretty freely movable as well. There might be some pragmatic considerations for that, where it can move. Comparative clauses are part of the sentence. They're still subordinate, however. Then we've got here reporting clauses considered as main clauses where the direct speech is in the object position. So he said, and then the direct speech comes. So the reporting causes are considered the main causes, and then the quote is considered the direct object. Comment clauses have a loose connection to the main clause, usually considered as adjuncts, adverbials there. Comment clauses where you're kind of making some kind of comment on the other thing that's said in the sentence. Okay. We have exercise 4 from classes 8 and 9 on complex sentences and subordination. We could do that right now. Let me pause the recording.